This is the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency with information for IT professionals. For more information and to download other shows, visit ciaops.podbean.com. This is episode 14 with Ryan Spillane and is sponsored by Applied Marketing Technologies, the leaders in the Australian market for customer relationship management and small business networks. Visit them on the web at www.amt.com.au. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and in today's episode, we'll be featuring a discussion on employees. And with us to do that is Ryan Spillane from Correct Solutions. Hello, Ryan.
G'day, Rob. Thanks for having me.
No problems at all. So as we always do start out here on the podcast, for those who aren't aware who you are, if you can just introduce yourself and obviously also introduce us to Correct Solutions.
Yeah, sure thing. I've been involved in IT now since quite a young age, like I'd say most people have been. I was at school, did an upgrade in high school, actually at the end of high school, on a desktop I had, an old Pentium 75. Even had a 286 before that, but that was quite a long time ago. And did an upgrade on it and thought, well, damn, this is pretty easy. I might as well start doing this. It was fun. And then from there, just started upgrading a few computers and then got an interest in it. Started playing around with Small Business Server about a week after it was actually released, rebuilt that a few times to get it right as I was learning, and then the rest, as they say, is from history. Just started growing personally from there, joined and took over Correct in 2005. So a bit about Correct. We have been running for 14 years now, this February. We look after, our focus is small business and small to medium business, really, in the 20 to 50 range. We've got clients in the 100 to 200, and our biggest client has just gone through 600 desktops. They've got nearly 50 servers as well. So we do range a bit. Our smallest client is two machines and a server. So it's it does present a few challenges for us to scale over that client base, but really our focus is the 20 to 50s. We also, as part of that, is we take ownership of our clients' IT environments and let them do what they do best, which is whatever industry they're in. We don't run any particular verticals like accounting or lawyers or anything like that. We do work across pretty much every industry, from medical to, again, accountants, lawyers, manufacturing, importers, development. It means for us it works out quite well in that if one industry is slowing down or is not going as well as others, well, we've still got the other industries that keep us up. So you've rarely have every single industry in a free fall or going down as such. So, like, for example, in 2010, the building industry was actually doing okay because of some of the government grants. So that actually picked up from some of the other areas that weren't doing so well. This year, the construction industry probably won't be as busy. So they'll come back, but then some of our other professional clients and professional services, such as accounts and things like that, well, they're due to spend a little bit more money. So it works out quite well for us.
And did you mention how many how big your business is, how many employees you've got?
No, not as yet. We are now at 21 staff. We were at December, so this recording's in January 2011, but in December we were at 17 staff. And over the break, we've just done another merge and acquisition, which we've done a few M&As over the years, and we're now at 21 and still looking for one more. So hopefully by the end of January, we'll be at 22 people.
Excellent. Okay. Well, I think that gives us all a good grounding, good idea of the size of your business and the experience that you've got. And again, that's one of the reasons that we've brought you on board to have a bit of a chat today, you know, and focus on employees. So, to kick off the ball, what would you say? You know, obviously you've mentioned that you're looking for a new staff member. What are you looking for in a good employee? And obviously, there's probably going to be two typical styles of employees, you know, a technical person and also just a general admin or office person. But let's focus on the technical. What sort of things are you looking for that make a good technical employee in your experience?
Well, look, I think there's a bit of commonality between the both as well. So, like, common things such as being able to explain themselves. Doesn't matter whether they're an admin or whether they're in technical. If they can hold a conversation and be able to talk to someone either over the phone, in person, that's important. from a technical perspective, yes, that's very important because you need to be able to explain to an end customer, to someone on the phone, someone face to face, what the problem is with their computer. From their perspective, the computer doesn't work. From an engineer's perspective, hey, it might be a faulty RAM stick on this socket on the motherboard. That doesn't mean anything to a customer. They see it, their computer doesn't work. So you need to be able to relate their level of knowledge with the actual problem and put it into a way that the customer can understand. So really, communication is probably the biggest one, even, as I said, across both the technical and general. Reading and listening and actually understanding what a client's asking, that's massively important, again, across both. So for a general or for a sales part, if someone wants a red laptop bag and you quote them a black one, well, that's no good. You didn't actually listen. If they're saying that the printer's not printing and that something changed yesterday somewhere else, well, yes, you need to take that into account, but you need to still listen and understand what the customer's saying. That's probably the most important. Being able to work with other staff members, being part of the team, that's really important as well. We've got a good work ethic at Correct and a lot of fun at Correct. So you've got to be able to, you need to be able to fit into there, and the team has to be still good. Just trying to think what else you'd need.
So let's have a think about, again, let's just concentrate on the technical. What sort of formal qualifications, and you can extend this into the general staff as well, but what sort of formal qualifications are you looking for in somebody who wants to come on board technically? I mean, you know, do they necessarily need that? Do they need to be an MCP? Do they need to have, you know, some other certifications? What, in your experience, you know, do you think is a, you know, a base level professional qualification that they should have?
Look, we love people having MCPs and MCSEs, really ultimately the current ones, but there's also a lot of people out there that have an MCP in Windows XP or Windows 7 or Windows Vista. To us, they're not really an MCP. Yes, they've passed an exam that's given them three lovely letters that they can put on their resume. But really for us, you don't have to have an MCP or an MCSE for us to consider you. It is, don't get me wrong, it's welcomed, but it's not a requirement. But we do require that within 6 months of working within, like for Correct, that you do have a server-based MCP. So whether that's a SBS MCP, whether it's a Windows Server, an Exchange Server, SQL, etc. So we need to have a server-based MCP within 6 months of working with Correct. So from that perspective, it's something we push out to our clients, that all of our engineers are, or all of our staff are certified. So that's part of how we keep that. And they also need to keep currency as well. So, for example, we need to very shortly go and do a lot of our SBS 2011 exams. So a bunch of our staff need to upgrade that, myself included. So as such, no, there's no requirement. We do try and train our staff quite often than not. We do internal training. If vendors are running training, we'll often try and send staff along to those. So, again, it's nice to have people coming in with existing skills. That's definitely nice. For the senior positions, you'd kind of expect that, because if they don't have any certification or anything like that, look, they probably haven't done a lot in the IT industry, or they haven't been in it for years. Yes, there are some of the older people out there that have just done IT for so many years. And look, we look for that as well. You don't have to be certified, as I've said. If you've got the skills and you can actually demonstrate the skills, look, I'd rather take that over someone that has a lot of MCSEs or a lot of MCPs. I'd take someone with experience most days of the week.
And I suppose that was sort of what I was leading to, is obviously there's a component here that's practical experience and, you know, hands on the ground. I mean, obviously it's hard to work out because every candidate's different. Would you say that it's better that they do have some sort of practical experience so they can, you know, because they look, I've actually worked and done this, rather than just having a, you know, a big lump of certifications? And I suppose the other question on the practical experience is, do you look for something that's more in the small to medium into your market size, or do you look at it and say, well, they've had experience with servers at an enterprise level, yes, that sort of qualifies, or do you see that the SMB experience is something unique to that sort of market?
Look, my preference is definitely someone that's come out of SMB land or other resellers as such, because they understand that at least then that not every SMB and generally each customer you've got is somewhat different. The big enterprise guys, look, they're very smart in some of the things they do, no doubt about that. But at the same token, they quite often than not can't handle dealing with one issue in this 30 minutes for a client, and then next 30 minutes they're dealing with an issue from something that's totally different. They're not usually, it takes them a long time to transition to where they can start looking after multiple clients and then start remembering multiple environments. Because some of these enterprise guys might have been looking after 25 or 30 or 100 Exchange servers in an enterprise, and that's all they did, predominantly Exchange. Well, for the SMB land, one minute you might be working on a server disaster recovery, the next minute you might be working on a Microsoft Word problem. It's, you're not pigeonholed as such as you quite often are in enterprise. So for us, yeah, definitely. If someone has SMB experience, if someone has proven experience in the channel or as a VAR or a systems integrator, that's really good. The hardest bit, though, is actually verifying their experience, because everyone loves putting things on resumes that they're great at or they're advanced at, and then 5 minutes later or you ask them a few questions and, yes, what they confirm and what they say is advanced compared to what you think is quite different.
Yes, I think the term you're looking for is embellish.
Yes, definitely.
Quite a common practice. Okay, so now that we've started to, we've looked at you know, what makes a good employee, I think the next thing, which is probably more what the audience is interested in, is how do you go about finding the good staff? So just give us a typical.
It's difficult.
Well, obviously, but let's just say you're looking for a new technical person. What's your standard sort of process? Let's just go through what you would do as a standard process. And obviously, it may not work out every time, but you know, just as a run of the mill thing, you know, ad in the paper, call for an interview, that sort of stuff. Just give us an idea of what typically you're going to do to find a new employee.
Okay, so the process would be, we obviously come up with the need internally. We would write a role description, and then obviously a job description to fit that role. We generally use Seek. We're not a big fan of recruiters, because obviously they're always pushing their agenda only. So for us, we generally use Seek or the websites for the international people, so Monster and all those types of ideas. But yeah, we've done quite well on Seek over the last 5 or 6 years. We then obviously put the job ad up there. From there, obviously, they start, like part of the job ad is we'll ask them to put a cover letter in as to why they'd be a good candidate. We would like them to add references in or give us a separate reference list, those types of things. So part of our job ad is a bit of a list of things that they need to do to get a job with Correct. And it's actually quite funny, and this is part of the cleansing of those resumes and those candidates, is whether people read it and actually listen, again, from the listening before and the reading and understanding, whether people actually read the job ad and actually follow it. Quite often than not, we have resumes come in and it was just the resume only. No cover letter, no references, no why would they like this job, none of that. So look, we still look at them, but unless they're an impressive resume with a lot of skills and a lot of experience in our specific industry, they wouldn't get a second look, because they haven't even read the job ad properly and they've not responded to it properly.
Which sort of indicates that they're blasting out their resumes to multiple people in the hope that they'll obviously, you know, get a
the shotgun approach.
Yeah, that's basically right. The shotgun approach. So I think, again, I mean, probably the first, you know, the first little bit of a little tip there is if you're considering that sort of job, is to sit down and, you know, read it carefully, read it once, read it twice, and make sure you meet all the criteria and answer all the questions. So
that's right. I'd rather someone, and admittedly I've never gone and sent my resume out in my life, but I'd like, the way I would imagine doing it is picking 4 or 5 jobs on the Seek website that you're interested in, and then go and actually apply for those. Don't go and just do 20 or 30. It's actually quite funny to see how over a period of time the same person might apply for the job 4 or 5 times. Seek keep the job ad up there for 30 days. And yeah, quite often than not, we'll have people apply for the job 2 and 3 times. So obviously they haven't got a list of who they're applying with. If you actually do a phone interview, which we'll go through a little bit later, but quite often not, they don't even remember applying for the job.
Okay.
Likewise, you often see within about 5 minutes of placing the ad, obviously the candidates out there are seeing an email come to them saying that a new job ad has been posted, but within 5 minutes you might have 10 or 15 resumes, and you know those people have had absolutely no time to read the job ad. They've just, again, shotgun approach, they've just applied straight away without reading it. So again, those people don't generally get a good look in at all.
Okay. All right, so let's say that you put your ad in and, you know, you've got responses. You know, obviously, typically you get lots and lots of responses. Once you've got those, what's the process you go through to cull those down? How do you make a decision? Is it just you, or do you involve other staff, or do you sort of, you know, sort of say, do you have a rating system? How do you obviously get through the initial, you know, the huge amount of CVs that normally roll in the door?
Okay, so look, it's a very manual task. Yes, there are several people involved in this. Generally, it's myself that reads 95 to 99% of the resumes come in, so it's not always the best use of my time. But if you look at our history with staff over the years, we've only ever let someone go, or only ever had one person not make their probationary period with Correct, and we've got staff that have been with us over 10 years. We've got two staff already over 10 years, and for our Gen Ys, it's actually the longest job most of them have had, even by double. So we must be doing something okay. Mm-hmm. So look, I'll go through and read the resumes, I'll read the cover letters, those types of things. Quite often than not, from being around for so long in the Sydney area, we kind of know a lot of the other IT companies out there, so you'll actually look at the experience and see whether they're coming from someone that is actually a good player in the industry. I look at longevity. Longevity for us is paramount. I don't want to be turning staff over every 6 or 12 or 24 months. I want staff to be with us for 5 years, 10 years, that type of thing. So if someone's gone and changed job every 6 months, 12 months, or have over 10 years had 5 jobs, so basically their last 2 years at each job, well, is that someone that I want in Correct? Generally, no, because you go and spend time with them, you train them, you actually show them the way we do things, the best practices we evolve and actually use and develop, and then they go and leave. Now, they'll probably remember some of it, they'll forget other bits of it, but I don't want to have to keep training people. So I'd rather go with someone that's been with the job for quite some time, and you know that they're quite stable and don't plan on moving every 6 months. Likewise, if they've got good skills, like, MCPs, MCSEs, they'll generally make their way up the ladder a bit. I actually use all of our jobs come into an Outlook public folder, and I actually categorize them by colors in there. And from that, there's several other parts of the team. They can actually look at that jobs folder as well. They can read resumes, and they'll see that I've color-coded certain ones. They'll read them themselves. If they get a green color, that means they get a job, they get a phone interview. So then our tech team will automatically pick those up, and we'll actually run through generally about an 8 to 10 minute phone interview with them. So that happens automatically. I'm not involved in that. All I get back is, after the tech team have done that, they record the phone call. They then send me the recording and the resume again, and I generally listen to them. And just, it's a great way of seeing if someone can present themselves and can talk clearly over the phone. That's a great way. So I'm imagining that I'm on the phone call or listening on the phone call. Can I understand them if they've got a heavy accent? Can they clearly define words? Can they pronounce words correctly? Those types of things.
So it's not so much, it's more a matter of communication rather than technical skill at this point.
That's right.
Okay.
Definitely. So making sure, look, we don't get me wrong, we ask them RAID questions, we ask them why.
On the phone interview, obviously, it's only very short, and you just work out whether, again, you know, obviously in an SMB style and in a customer service business, communication is paramount. So again, that's your first criteria, is to work out whether they can communicate with other staff members, and obviously then whether they can communicate with you. So, The other way that I've approached it too is that what I've tended to do is actually rate them. So again, you color code them, but I would throw them into a some sort of spreadsheet, and I give them a rating out of 10. So it allows me to, you know, I suppose in some way evaluate them on a pure number, and then I just sort them by the highest to the lowest and work through those numbers, and then, you know, to make the phone interviews. So again, the reason I like to do that is because it puts a qualitative number on it rather than just a feel, because again, you know, some people's feel can be very different from somebody else's. So at least this way, if you get people that are close together, you can break up that number and say, right, their communications was 5 out of 10, their technical knowledge was 7 out of 10, and then if you have to, you can add it all up and weight it and actually give a score to help you make a decision. So that again, that's just my experience that people could take away as well. So,
and Rob, I love that idea, and I've already taken a note that I'm going to play with that on the next job ad that's out there.
That's all right, no problems at all. Feel free to steal my material. Okay, so you've done the phone interview, you've cut that down obviously to a number of candidates. So can you give us an idea of the ratio that you think you've started out, you know, with 100 CVs, you've gone through the phone interview, or you've from that 100 CVs, you've culled it down to so many you do a phone interview. What percentage typically gets thrown out in that first, before the, you know, working out who gets the phone interview?
Yeah, definitely. Look, it's changed quite a lot over the last 3 to 4 years, actually. If you go back into probably 2007, 2008, we'd often get between 260 and 300 resumes per job ad out there.
Yeah, I think my record was 750.
Yep, that's scary. Nowadays, it's actually getting harder. Like, we would often see now maybe only 30 people applying. So at the moment, it's actually quite reduced. So look, quite often than not, in 2010, we actually had to apply for a technician role twice just to get someone.
Okay.
And actually, in that case, we actually use a referral, which we'll talk about a bit later as well. So generally, I'd say you'll cut down to maybe phone interviews. Out of 30 now, we might do 4 or 5 phone interviews, and then I try and cut that down to maybe 2 or 3 face to face.
Okay, so you've done the CVs thing, you've done the phone interviews, so you're down to typically 2 or 3 candidates now. So obviously you're going to bring them in for an interview. Give us some idea of the process, like, as in sort of how long you run the interview for, what sort of questions you ask and what people are involved, and then obviously how you evaluate the success of that candidate based on that that interview process.
Yep, no, that's fine. Look, the interview process generally is about 2 to 2.5 hours. Now, that's not interview time. That's just how long the candidate will be at our office. And as time goes on, like, that's extended a little bit. It used to be maybe an hour, hour and a half. Now it's about 2, 2.5 hours. So, look, when they arrive, we'll put them into our boardroom or into a meeting room. They'll get they won't get the job description at that point in time, but they will get 2 sets of questions. They'll get some lateral and logical thinking questions, and they'll get 4 or 5 pages of technical questions. So, look, we say that the technical questions, that some are basic, some are really heavily advanced, and some people can't answer some of them, and that's fine. But it gives us a good idea of where they're at. So,
can I just ask those technical questions? So let's look at the technical questions first.
Yep.
Where do you pull those from? Is that somebody's experience, or are they standard? You know, how do you install a Windows XP thing? You know, where do you get those questions from?
Look, it's generally things that we've developed. It's something that we need to redevelop, actually. We need to actually adjust and expand them again. Some of the information or some of the questions are a little older. Look, they're still relevant, but they're not as relevant as, like, some of the new product that's out there now. So we do need to...
Okay. So again, the other thing is the other questions you're talking about, what did you call them? Sorry?
The lateral and logical.
The lateral. Okay, questions. The lateral and the logical questions. I think that most people will understand what the technical questions are and, you know, how they're relevant to an IT business. But the lateral questions you're talking about, again, give us some idea of, A, what those questions are aimed at, you know, what sort of questions they are, and again, you know, what you're looking for in those sort of examples.
Look, Rob, some of them are questions that you and I shared many years ago. So some of them are based off questions that you sent me a few years ago, in that, how many cars are in Australia? Why is a manhole cover round? Things like that. It just makes people think, and it's good to see some of the answers that come out of them.
Well, I think that, again, my theory, I'll just interrupt and give you my... The reason that I come up with those sort of questions is that I personally believe that the majority of technical questions can be solved by doing a Google search. So,
yep,
you can find the pure technical information basically anywhere or by talking to someone. it's more important in my books to find someone who can work through that information, understand it, and then apply it. And that means that typically most situations you see these days are non-repetitive. So there's a slight difference or a slight change that, you know, you've got to take what you see on the net and then maybe modify it for the situation. So again, you need somebody who can take a problem and say, right, these are the resources, these are the reference books, I can work it out from here based on the information that I have. So, for example, one of the questions that I like to ask, and again, there's the issue here is also that it prevents the candidate from actually rehearsing any questions. So they can sort of say, oh, you know, I know how to how to check for exchange server and inbound mails. I've got some idea. But if you come up with these sort of off the wall questions, it really shows you how they think. So one of my favorites is that to ask them something like, how would you work out how long it would take, you know, the Manly ferry? So a ferry to travel from Sydney Harbour across to the Manly Beach and then all the way back. Now, again, there's a couple of different ways to answer that. It's not a right or a wrong. You could, for example, work out, you know, guesstimate the speed of the ferry and the distance and then, you know, work out the stops at either end and come up with a number. Or, again, maybe you'd be looking for someone to say, well, hang on, I just go to the public's, you know, the public transport website and look up their timetable and work out the difference. That's going to tell me. So both answers are correct, but it shows, you know, a way of
But thinking. That also is some logic there, Rob. The correct. Amount of times that we have people correct. That answer questions like these and actually just leave them blank.
Exactly.
They don't even try. So, yes, in that particular instance, Rob, you don't need to know how long it takes. You just need to show, ultimately, that, hey, even if the Manly Ferry takes 40 minutes each way and it takes 20 minutes to unload, well, you can say a round trip takes 100 minutes. But at least you've put something down. The amount of people that just put absolutely nothing down because they won't think about it. The other thing that you just mentioned there was maybe have a look on the Sydney Ferries website as an example. You could put that down and that would be valid because you thought, okay, it's not as simple as I just can't answer this and put your hands up and say, nope. Not interested, can't answer it.
And I think
instead you've thought about looking at how you can find out that information.
And again, to me, the important thing is the thinking process, how somebody
right.
comes at the answer. It doesn't have to be the right answer, but if you've done everything logically and, you know, within your understanding, then that's a fair attempt. But like you
that's
say,
right.
people who
and,
come
and
up
then
with
it's escalation after well, that.
Exactly. People who come up with something, say, oh, this is too tough, and then throw up their hands. And I mean, those sort of people typically, if they get a problem that's too difficult, will tend to sit on it, procrastinate, and make the situation worse. Especially in a small business, rather than, you know, admit to themselves, I don't know how. And again, I think an important answer in that is to say, well, I don't know, or, you know, it's beyond me sort of thing. But to leave it blank, like you said, is a very poor indication. So
yep.
Anyway, so again, so you give them these two and they're obviously written. Both of those?
That's correct.
Okay.
Definitely. Both of those are written and generally, look, it throws them. It throws the people that they just, yeah, coming out of the end of it, quite often than not, the interviews just weren't working well. So what we do now is we actually give them, we take those questions away. Look, we have people check in, make sure they've got a glass of water, make sure they're okay, all those types of things during the process. But we'll get those questionnaires, we'll have a read through them with whoever's interviewing the people or the person. And during that process where we're reading their answers to some of these questions, we'll actually give them the job description and an information pack about Correct. So they can read up a little bit more. They can understand a little bit more about Correct. They can understand the role a bit more. So it gives them a way of calming down a little bit after obviously going through the questionnaires.
You're too kind, Ryan. You're just too nice a bloke. I suppose, on that, can I just ask you, do you ask the employees when they walk in the door for the technical interview, do you ask them if they can tell you about Correct off the bat?
It's mixed. It's not actually in a procedure, but yes, quite often than not, we will ask them. As in, have you heard about Correct? Do you know about Correct? So that means have they actually done any research or are they
exactly.
just turning up?
Exactly. So I think that's another important point for me is that I would like to see someone who's actually done some research, even just gone to the website, read a bit about it, got some idea. But if they walk in cold and they haven't even, you know, done any due diligence on the business, then chances are that, again, they're just doing the shotgun approach. They're not particularly keen on this job. It's just one of maybe six interviews they've got that day. So, again, one of the first questions I would always like to ask them is, okay, you tell me about my business? You know, what have you learned, or, you know, what is out there in the public sphere that you can tell me about the business that you're applying for? So I think that's, to me, is a very critical component when they first walk in the door. So
that's right.
All right. So you've given them the third degree. You've given them two sets of questions. And from there, obviously, you evaluate those questions with multiple staff. What's the procedure from there?
Okay, so look, generally it's myself and either the service manager and maybe a tech, or generally it's the service manager and I for a technical role that will do the interviews. So look, we'll sit down with them. We'll go through some of the questions. Some of the questions in there are kind of like that they've completed our leading questions, as in where would you in the world would you like to travel, those types of questions as well. So during the interview, if there is a lull, or if they're not comfortable, if they're not actually going well in the interview as such because they're feeling uncomfortable, quite often than not, we'll bring back a question that they've actually answered in the past, is as in where would you like to travel? And that then, it's a topic they know about. It's a topic that they understand because, hey, that's something they want to do. So they feel very confident about that. So they answer that question. You've just raised their confidence up a little bit, and then you can then ask another question that they're not as comfortable with, but because they've got a bit of confidence, they'll actually answer that question. And they're not as scared or worried as such. So it's really psychological at the end of the day, because you've got to keep get the information you want out without making them feel that uncomfortable, that why would they ever want to work for you, or run out of the room. We had that years ago where it wasn't at the interview, so don't worry about this, listeners. It's a case of people saw the technical questions and literally left the building. Mm-hmm. He just said, I can't answer these. And it was like, well, did you even look at them? And he was worried about some of the advanced questions, where some of the basic questions like screen resolutions and things like that, he could have easily answered, but he didn't even attempt. Mm-hmm. So through the interview, we've got a OneNote document, or like a procedure document on the actual interview process. We'll go through and explain the job as well. We'll explain a bit about Correct, its history, the work ethic, the ethos in the company, those types of things. We'll make sure that we'll give them plenty of opportunities to ask their questions. We explain things such as we run payroll monthly, make sure that they're going to be okay with that, which generally I think most places and most IT companies in Australia run monthly.
Sorry to interrupt again, but is that the typical question that comes back at you? You know, when am I going to get paid? Is there anything else that you would say is a typical question that the candidate's going to ask you or of the business?
No, look, we can answer most of those questions even before they ask them. So all those types of things we cover off in a bit of our checklist ourselves. And the questions back from them are generally not to me, are generally to the other tech team or to any of the other staff that are in the interviews. Isn't what's the environment like to work in? What are some of the things that you do? What type of the systems and what type of phone calls, if they're on help desk or if they're field tech, what type of call outs would I be doing? So they really want to actually find out a bit more about the job, which is really handy, actually.
Okay, so that shows a level of interest. Obviously, if they're asking a certain level of question,
that's right.
They want to understand. No, that's fair enough. That's a good indicator.
That's right. So look, from there, we then go through like our probationary periods, and again cover off on all those types of things. Make sure that if they've got any other questions, we also go through and spend a bit of time going through some of the technical questions and answers. In the past, we never did, but we actually nowadays we do. So one of our questions was, how many users could an SBS 2003 or a 2008 server have? And the enterprise boys would say, well, hey, it's as many cows as you put in there. Well, no, it's 75. And quite often than not, people will actually make things up. So we'll go through and correct a few of them, and we'll see. Some people are actually really interested then, and they actually ask, okay, where else can I improve? What else did I answer wrong? And what else can you let me know? So again, that shows you that they're really interested. Mm-hmm. Not everyone does that. So the ones that do that, they're the ones that generally get hired, actually, because they want to learn and understand where they made a mistake and how they can right it.
Well, again, it comes down to, again, you're able to teach people. Your environment, your business is going to be slightly unique, and they're going to need to learn. If they don't show the ability or the inclination to sit down and want to take on the information, then you're going to get problems. And I've had the experience where we've had highly qualified and certified people come in and ruin the business, basically, because they try to do everything their own way. You know, they try to use enterprise rules and enterprise group policies in areas that just weren't applicable. Even when you told them that that wasn't acceptable, they still didn't change their ways, because what it turned out to be is that's all they knew.
That's
they,
right.
They weren't flexible enough. They couldn't grow. And at the end of the day, they ended up having to leave or moving on because the environment just didn't suit them. It's a very ad hoc environment. You do have to learn quickly. The tools are there, but again, that's an important aspect to look at.
That's right. We've also got a an A3 bit of paper, or for the international guys, a big bit of paper that we have a network diagram on. And we'll actually put that in front of them, give them some whiteboard markers because it's laminated so you can draw all over it. And we'll ask them to actually explain what they're seeing. So we have IP addresses on it, we have routers on it, those types of things. And we then say to them, okay, explain the environment or explain what they're looking at here. And then we'll run through a bit of a role-based where I'll be the end user as such, ringing up and saying, I've got a problem where I'm at a branch office and I can't talk to head office. And we run through to see how many people can actually solve the problem or whether they can actually and what process they follow. So I look over the probably 100 plus candidates we've interviewed. We've probably only had 4 or 5 people that have actually ever solved the ultimate problem. But we actually work through with a lot of them and say, okay, well, can you ping this? What would you do? Talk me through how to run a ping, all those types of things, as opposed to them just saying, well, ping this. And I say, well, hang on, I'm an end user. Explain to me how to do that. What do I need to do? And a few of them couldn't do that. They couldn't even tell you to go and run a command prompt and
again,
type in this.
They've read it and never actually done it themselves. So.
That's right. So we cross-check a lot of those types of things. And again, that has come out of our personal experience.
Okay.
We've actually written this actual picture of the environment from something that happened to us in the early 2000s, an issue that we came across and racked our brains on for quite a few hours and then solved it. It ended up being something silly as a gateway address. Mm-hmm. And I think I've just answered that. So if anyone listens to this, they think they've now got the answer. But yes, there's a missing section on one of the network cards. So okay. It was as simple as that.
All right. So just a quick reversal here. What about your non-technical staff? What sort of process, as an interview process, do they go through?
Look, we still give them the lateral thinking questions because, from my perspective, that's still relevant. It's more a case of, for those, it's more about the job description and a bit of a discussion. In those, obviously, we're not going to bring our service manager in, but we'll bring in some of our admin team. So it might be one person or two people. It's a case of if we're adding a role or adding an extra person, which we are again at the moment, we might bring the person that's doing that role in or someone that's doing part of that role so they can talk about what they do in their normal day. So again, it just shows the candidate a bit more about the role, what the expectations are, those types of things.
And I think the other thing too with those, you know, off the wall, you know, other questions, the logical and those sort of questions, is what it tells you also is generally you want people in the business to work well together. That means they do have to have similar or compatible personalities. And
again,
those sort of questions help you, in my opinion, work out and find the people who are compatible. Because again, you can have the greatest technical person in the world and the greatest admin person in the world, but if they clash and if they don't get on, well, then they're not going to be productive and the business is going to suffer. So part of that also is I think understanding, you know, how the person is going to fit into the business, because every business has its own unique culture, and that at the end of the day is also just as important as technical information, because again, you've gone through this huge process and bringing the person on, employing them, and they don't want to come in you don't want to come in a month's time and find out that they've sent their resignation through to you because they can't work in the environment. So
that's right. Look, staff at the end of the day are the biggest asset for a company and also the biggest liability. If your team is not working together, then why even bother turning up? Because it's not going to work.
Well, exactly. And I think, you know, that's a huge part of, you know, the boss's role is to basically make sure that you've got the most effective team and that process of culling them and finding out and hand picking them is very important. So we've done that. You've done the interview. From that interview, you obviously send out request for them to join, and then obviously I would assume that most of them would probably accept that.
Well, we need to come back a step, actually, Rob. Yep. We need to, at the end of the interview, we'll actually say that obviously we've got other interviews, even if we want that particular person.
Okay.
We're not going to show our hand right there and then in case that someone else that we do interview is actually better.
Playing hard to get.
Yep, of course. We'll say that, okay, we've got to evaluate a few other people. And again, even if we know that this is the person to join us, which, hey, we've picked them right there and then, we won't tell them that. We'll actually still say that we've got to evaluate other people. Just buys us a little bit of time to actually discuss after the interview whether they're good and bad points of the interview and the candidate, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. So look, we'll generally say, okay, we'll get back to you within 48 to 72 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Look, it's a fine line. You've got to also move fast because quite often than not,
yeah,
if you don't move fast, they've already got other jobs because they do that shotgun approach.
Of course.
90% of them, they've got two or three jobs that they'll look at.
Okay.
Something that we had in 2010 was a lot of people loved the idea of working and coming on board with us, but a few people ended up staying in their previous jobs, or quite often than not, and this is the annoying thing at the moment, is people will actually go and come to an interview, will then go and say, okay, go back to their original boss and say, well, I've got a job offer or a letter of offer for somewhere else.
Oh, okay.
And they'll use it as
leverage.
They'll get more money, they'll solve whatever problem they have at their existing job through this process, and won't actually come in and won't start with you.
Okay.
So we had two of those in 2010, and it was a little bit annoying actually. I think it may have actually been three.
Well, I think there's probably not a lot you can really do because the candidate's obviously going to keep their cards close to their chest, and at the end of the day, they're doing the best thing for themselves. As any good business person would as well, and I suppose again it's a matter of working out the processes to try and find those people as early as possible. So once you've gone through all that, when you actually contact the person to make them the offer, you just give them a phone call. Is that normally the way?
Yep, generally I'll call them back and say, okay, well, you've been successful. I'm going to email through a job offer for you,
mm-hmm.
And we've got a letter of offer. That runs through again a lot of things such as the probationary period, yep, when they're paid, salary, benefits, all those types of things.
Okay, so again, we'll hopefully be able to cover that sort of contractual and bringing employees on, in a future podcast, so we can just focus on the bringing the employees. So once you've got that process, you bring them on board, and then you do the induction process. So
that's right.
Let me just. We'll turn this around a bit. So what's your thinking or what's your feeling on perhaps using referrals or maybe even something like social media to start finding appropriate candidates? What's your feedback and experience in that respect?
Okay, so this year is the first time we've 2010 was the first time that we've actually had a referral. Actually, I think we've had two in the past, but only one had come off. But in 2010, we actually did a referral. We were looking for another help desk tech, and out of two job ads, we really had nothing but rubbish. We did give one job offer. Again, they actually used that as leverage against their existing boss, so it didn't end up coming on board. And we actually ended up using a referral from one of our existing team, and it's actually worked out quite well. That guy is still in his... in his probationary period, but he, at this stage, he's definitely going to make that without a problem, and is actually working out really well within the company.
Okay, so let's again. So you've had a good experience so far. So let's move this forward.
Well, there's also a little bit of a fear in that, Rob, as well, I did a little bit of digging and actually asked questions of this referral, in that I didn't want someone that was best friends with one of our existing staff, because that means if you have a problem with one of them, chances are you're going to lose both.
Mm-hmm.
So referrals are for us, or for me actually, are something that are good, but you've also got to make sure there's a little bit of distance, as in if they live together, if they're friends, if they're best friends, I wouldn't probably, unless we really needed someone desperately, or unless they were an absolute fantastic tech, I don't think I'd take them, for the sole reason that if there's ever a problem, which again we've not had, but it's eventually going to happen one day, I'd rather not lose two people.
Okay, so let me throw this one at you. What about the situation, and this is my current thinking on finding staff. Why aren't you, or shouldn't you be trying to get staff to come and be employed by you? So what I'm saying is, what you need to be attracting the staff. So you've got people trying to get in, so then you don't have to go through this interviewing process and finding the person, all that sort of stuff. Wouldn't it make more sense to use the tools that are out there to make your business so attractive that, you know, there's always a good pool of candidates that you could tap on the shoulder and say, look, we need an extra tech, we need an extra admin person, rather than doing the reverse and going out to the, you know, going out to the market and having to do all the work yourself. I mean,
absolutely. I know in the, again, during this, with that referral, actually, I also at that time put onto Facebook, onto Twitter and things like that, that we're after someone. So look, in 2011, as we move forward, yes, that's something we would definitely be doing as well. So the social media side of it, that type of thing, definitely. I think that's something that's going to be really important moving forward.
So those, the mediums that you mentioned there, Facebook, Twitter, and whatnot.
LinkedIn.
Oh, you did. I was going to say, did you use LinkedIn, which is obviously more a business orientated, networking medium?
My preference is LinkedIn every day of the week. Okay. For me, LinkedIn is a business tool, where Facebook is more of a friendship tool.
Yep. Okay. No, that's fine. I think, and again, I think the message is that there's more and more people every day using LinkedIn, and they have their credentials typically online and available publicly 24/7. So you don't necessarily need to wait for a CV to come out. And I think the other powerful thing about LinkedIn is its referrals and its recommendations. Again,
that's right.
You know, if you are on LinkedIn, it's something I think that you need to be asking people for, or contacts, to try and build up your testimonials, because that certainly gives you that practicality and that the obvious that you've been able to work with people, and means that a third party can contact those and verify that you are what you say you are. So I think, again, this is the benefit of these sort of social media from a candidate's point of view and also from a business's point of view. And I think that, you know, so many businesses these days, especially at the small end of town, obviously they're busy, I understand that, but they need to be using these tools and leveraging these tools so that they're always out there looking for candidates, or letting candidates know, and minimizing the amount of work that they have to go through. Because I think you'll agree that having to go through that traditional process of, you know, put an interview, even on the internet, go through CVs, do an interview, all that sort of stuff is hard work.
Oh, it's time consuming. That's the biggest thing.
And time is money, especially in a small business. And I think that, again, it's a case that, again, the employees are so important to your business, that it's something that I think so many people seem to think is, oh, we'll get them as we need them. I would think that the trend now is you need to look at having recruiting basically 24/7. Your business needs to be focused on constantly recruiting. You can always turn people away. You can always say, no, we haven't got a position, or call us in 3 months, or keep in contact, or yada, yada, yada. If they really want to work in your business, then they're going to make sure they stay involved and keep pestering you for a job. So
I think
at the end of the day, that's where the mindset certainly has to change. I think in the small end of town is you need to be constantly recruiting. And again, the tools are out there to improve the ability to do that, like Twitter, LinkedIn, blogs, all that sort of stuff needs to be updated and maintained regularly, with the aim of not only letting customers knowing what's going on, but also to let, you know, potential employees know that this is a great business and they really want to come and work with you. So,
well, definitely. You don't have to just sell yourself to customers. You've got to sell yourself to new and potential staff.
Well, and I think that, and again, I think the difference is that these tools make it much easier. So again, on the you hear so many people in the smaller end of the market poo-poo Twitter, Facebook to an extent, LinkedIn, I haven't got time. But again, when they need a staff member and they have to go through this whole interview process, and then the staff member resigns a month into the job, how much has that been wasted, where it could have been, you know, equally proportioned to something like some of the social media? So again, I think it's again a case of looking at the tools and using it. And I think the other thing too is, what I would say is, obviously you're a fairly large business. You're lucky that you have a number of staff, and you can call them in to have their experience and their opinions on the staff member. But if you're a one-man band or a two-man band, there's nothing wrong with asking some of your peers to assist you in interviewing candidates, or do
Definitely
the phone
not.
Interviews or something. I think, you know,
bring them in.
Exactly.
That's right.
Somebody else's opinion, who may have more experience or come at it from a different angle, can give you a totally, you know, unbiased opinion, where, again, you may have some sort of, you know, judgment on the person. And again, that may help where you get a referral.
That's
you get
right.
A completely independent third party that knows nothing about the referee or the referral, and they just make an assessment and then, you know, send you an email saying, well, this is what I found. So again, in
we
this...
actually we do some of that for our clients. Like okay. we've got about 20% of our clients actually have in-house IT, and quite often than not, they'll need to add someone else to that team. We've done countless interviews on behalf of clients, and being as part of the interview process, some of them have used our questionnaires and things like that as part of the recruitment process for themselves for an internal role. And look, we're happy. We go down and we're part of it. We help them out because, look, at the end of the day, I'd rather deal with someone that has got half a brain on an internal role for one of our customers than us trying to have to teach them from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
Or someone that thinks that they know what they're doing and they don't, and ends up causing both us more work and the client more expense.
Well, I think, again, this is, you know, the general theme of most of these podcasts towards the end, which is we're getting close to a wrap up, is that, again, there's so many resources now technically available. But again, I think so many people overlook the community, overlook their peers, overlook people that they know who are similar business owners, whether they're big or they're small. They have experience, they have the ability to give you some feedback. And if you haven't got the resources within your own business to do that, they're the perfect candidate. And this comes back to, again, the ability that continually networking with these people, continually making sure that you involve them in your business or make them aware and assist. I mean, most people in the community that I'm aware of would be more than happy to help anybody else if requested. So again,
that's right.
I think too many people see themselves in a small business as a, you know, this is my business. I have to do everything the traditional way the big businesses do. I can't let anybody else in. I can't let my peers in or community. They'll laugh at me or they'll think I'm silly or they won't agree with my methods. I don't think that's the case. I think that you get far more leverage and far more power by going out to the community and saying, look, you know, guys, I need a hand with this. Can you give me an opinion on this? Well, what have you found here and what have you found there? And I think that's probably the missing component, which, again, the smaller you get, perhaps, the more beneficial that.
Oh, the community is massive. You've got exactly. it. The more you work with it, the better it is.
And again, I think, and again, it even throws out to people who aren't necessarily technically minded. You could, again, network in with people who are in other areas or your clients or whatever, you know, get the candidate maybe to talk to one of your better known clients or to get their right. opinion. Again, don't just think that you're restricted the resources that you've got.
Think outside the box.
Correct. And at the end of the day, that's what's going to find you the good candidate, the one that's really going to make a difference to your business. So
look, one of the last tips I'd add in there is, look, at the end of the day, trust your gut. That's yeah. one of the biggest things. So many times that people just don't trust their gut. They have a gut feel that something's not right. Trust it. If they're not right for you, you'd rather not take someone on and feel the short-term pain than bring someone on that's just a bad egg or absolutely damages the whole the work environment or hurts a client or you lose a client from them doing something wrong.
And I think it also comes down to, too, it's also planning, as we spoke about before, is you need to be looking at constantly recruiting. If you're going to all of a sudden think, oh, my goodness, I need a staff member urgently because I'm not going to be able to handle the load that I've already committed to, you're going to be desperate to take, you know, perhaps a substandard candidate.
That's right.
Again, even if you throw a job interview out there and you go through the whole process not planning to employ somebody, you can always say no at the end of the day and you've just wasted a bit of money and a bit of time.
Yep.
But you may find that you actually find someone who's worthwhile that you can culture and bring in as well. So
look, I think on that particular point, Rob, look, we're always recruiting. If someone comes along with a fantastic resume, I'll employ them. Even if we don't have the work for them, because look, okay, maybe we're in a little bit different aspect, but for us, finding the work's not the hard part. Finding a good staff is always the challenge. So I'd rather take on someone and take the risk of having to pay them when we don't have the work for them. But at the end of the day, I know I can bring the work in to cover them.
And again, I think that again, it's a matter of looking at how you run your business. Now, again, it's what people. Too many people are focused on the wrong sort of assets because the employees will make or break a business. And at the end of the day, they've got to implement what you want to put in place and what you want to achieve with your business. And they're an asset. And if they're not performing, then the business is going to suffer and you're going to be extra stressed. And as you can probably well appreciate, dealing with people is not as simple as dealing with computers. You can't necessarily just reformat it and move on.
No.
So
you'd love to, but yeah.
Yeah, there might be some liability if you were to do that, I think,
that's
in that
right.
case. So, but I think that's the case. I mean, you, as a technical person, you need to be able to have the skills. And in some cases, if you've been a technical person, you're looking to employ your first staff member, you need to probably acknowledge that you may not be the greatest people person or the greatest person to look at employees or even to manage them. Again, don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to, you know, improve your skills and look at, you know, the human resources side. And that's the only way it's going to happen. So again, there's plenty of people out there in the community that can help you and assist on that. So
that's right.
All right, so we're drawing to the end of our time here, Ryan. So what I'll get you to do is just give us a bit of a summary and you know, cover the whole thing over and all the stuff that we've covered and give us your general experience on, you know, if I'm a fairly small to medium business operator, reseller, and I'm looking to find good staff, you know, what are the main things I need to be doing?
Look, the recruitment process is difficult. Let's be honest about it. I think you need to time, and everyone's obviously time poor, but you do need to either spend a weekend, spend an evening if you're in a smaller environment, and literally go and lock yourself away or listen to some music, whatever, and jot down and get down what you want from someone. Write a job description, a role description, because they are two different documents. After you do that once, it then becomes a lot easier. It's not easy doing it the first time. It takes time. If you're looking to create a job ad, look, even we still do this now. Go and have a look on Seek for other what people are doing. Go and look at 10 other job ads. Take the bits that you like out of it. Rewrite the whole lot yourself. Bang, that's just saved you a few hours from writing a whole job ad. So use what's out there. The biggest thing, as I said, is spend the time. The more time you spend before you recruit someone, is going to save you double, if not longer, in actually the recruitment process. Because if you don't have a job description and someone's sitting down in front of you and you're giving them or asking them to do this role or do this job, they're going to want to be able to say something, or they're going to want to be able to see something. Likewise, after you've employed them, if they don't have a job description or a role description, how can you say that, hey, staff member, you're meant to be doing this, if they don't have something in paper or in writing saying that they need to do it? So the time spent up front, again, if you're time poor, look, everyone's time poor, but the time you spend up front is going to pay back massively in the long run.
Because at the end of the day, the employee has to want to work for you as much as you them to work. If you love them and they come to the business and say, oh, you know, the bathroom's untidy, there's no tea and coffee, or there's no milk in the fridge, they could walk out the door and probably find another job. I mean, that's given the economic climate, but that's still a possibility. So at the end of the day, at any point in time, an employee can come to you and say, look, you know, I've had enough, I want to resign, and that's their right to be able to do that. So as an employer, you need to say, well, you know, I don't want to go through all these costs, and there's much better to invest to keep the staff. And again, it's the same thing with customers. It's much easier to retain existing customers than it is to find new customers. Same with employees. So again, it's a two-way street, and you can't just bring somebody on and then just leave them to their own devices and expect them to flourish and to bloom into something that you expected. It's going to be a constant
working. Exactly. Reviewing the staff members after you employ them, we sit down with them. Look, for us, we have a 6-month probationary period instead of a 3-month probationary period. And look, for the way we do it is we actually sit down and review them at week 1, week 3, week 5, week 7, week 9, then week 12, and then at the 6-month mark. So they're constantly being reviewed. What did they do well? What did they not do so well? Where could they improve? Where can you train them better? Where can you show them process better? If you just go and employ someone, just leave them at their own devices, at the end of the day, they're just going to go and sit on Facebook or not going to get through much. They're going to sit on Instant Messenger. Exactly. So by reviewing them, by keep setting the expectation, keep showing them the expectation and what they need to be doing, you'll get a lot more out of the staff.
You've got to invest in them. Same with any asset. You've got to put investment in there. So I think to round off, the only other thing I would say is that, to me, the key staff, especially in a technical role, is what you're looking for in my books is someone who maybe writes a blog or maintains a website or has some interest that they've gone above and beyond their normal job. So many people just, you know, do help their stuff or fix computers or whatever to get that, you know, that employee who's really going to grow into a role, especially in the smaller to medium, because you want them to grow into a, you know, a wide diversity of things, is you're looking for that person who's already writing a blog, who's already creating information, who's already creating content, who's taking the time out of whatever they do to show an interest in the technology, and generally give them the opportunity and they'll run with it. So that's sort of the additional comment I'd make on all that sort of stuff.
Definitely.
All right, so I think that we've reached the end of our time period. I just want to thank Ryan very much for his insight into this topic. And to round off, is there what's the best way for anybody to get in contact with you if they have any questions or want some follow-up, or if they want to a job at Correct? See, we'll use that now.
Exactly. Look, if they want a job at Correct, send an email through to jobs@correct.com.au. If they want me, it's ryan@correct.com.au, or just do a Google and you'll easily find me.
Excellent. Well, there you go. You've got the job already, Ryan.
All right. The biggest thing is trust your gut. Be open and honest with people and trust your gut.
Yeah, as analytical as that sound, it works out 99 times out of 100, I think.
That's right.
All right, well, I'll take this opportunity to thank Ryan for his time and also everybody for listening today, and wish you all the best and look forward to another CIA Need to Know podcast coming soon. This podcast has been brought to you by the SharePoint Operations Guide. For more information, visit www.wssops.com. To provide feedback on this podcast, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.